Well, our show today is about the emerging culture of conscious eldering, a conversation about the making of a common, value-driven 21st century elder culture that will change the paradigm of aging. And our guests today on the telephone are David Lucky Goff, co-author of The Age of Actualization, a handbook for growing an elder community. Lucky has a background in transpersonal psychology. He and his partner, Alexandra Hart, started an elder salon in Sebastopol that has been meeting for 7 years now. He writes a blog called The Slow Lane about his observations on the aging process and the stages of human development. He explores the new terrain of aging and what he calls the farthest reaches of human development. Lucky is 68 years old. Welcome to Post Carbon Radio, Lucky.
Hi, Bing. Thank you.
Do we have Lucky on the line?
Can you hear me, Bing?
Yes.
Okay. I didn't hear him. Yeah.
You don't have your headset on.
Oh, sorry. Okay.
Sorry
about that.
We can hear you loud and clear. It's just going to take a minute.
Okay, my Thanks. Problem. All right. And we have Kurt A. Kovald visiting his daughter in Southern California, who is about to have a baby, Kurt's first grandson. Kurt is a Unitarian Universalist community minister and activist who I met with the climate activists on the train going across the country to New York City to the huge climate march in September 2014. He is an active supporter of Black Lives Matter and the fight against economic inequality. Kurt and I have been meeting with Lucky and a few other elders weekly in Sebastopol, sharing our perspectives on aging. Kurt is 73 years old. Welcome, Kurt.
Hi, thanks. Glad to be here.
And in Berkeley, on the phone, we have Barry Barkin, who has worked with the Live Oak Institute to restore the role of the elder to society since 1977. In traditional societies and indigenous cultures, elders are revered and honored, in contrast to our youth-oriented and ageist culture, where elders are discriminated against. He's been working for deep system change in the systems that serve elders in nursing homes and residential long-term care facilities and federal and state agencies that regulate and make policy. He calls it midwifing the culture of conscious aging, birthing a culture of aging that is life-affirming, satisfying, humane, meaningful, and joyful. Welcome, Barry.
Well, thank you very much. It's a pleasure.
Can you tell us how old you are?
Today or tomorrow? tomorrow I'm
74. Okay, great. Well, happy birthday. And so before we begin our conversation today on the emerging culture of conscious eldering, Karen, did you want to say a few words about Indigenous Peoples Day?
Yes. Thank you, Bing. I just wanted to acknowledge on air that today is being celebrated, at least in the Bay Area, as Indigenous Peoples Day. And the boats and the people and the dancers and the speakers were out on Alcatraz this morning. I was just listening to the recording as I came in. And I just want to echo a few of the words that they said. Tony Gonzalez was there with the Treaty Council, and he said that this day marks 524 years of resistance to colonization in the Americas. And they also talked about the role of radio in the Alcatraz situation, that since the occupation, the American Indian Movement occupation of Alcatraz from 1969 through 1971, right then, John Trudell, the famous Native American singer and poet, he started Radio Free Alcatraz, and they've been broadcasting ever since. So we're proud to be part of the radio tradition that brings those stories to the air. And, of course, they were talking about Standing Rock, but there were people from Native American nations from all over California present and giving their blessings. And the first song they sang was a grandmother's song. So it seemed very apropos to our show today. Mm-hmm.
Great. How about our guests? Do you guys have any comments about Indigenous Peoples Day?
Well, this is Kurt. One of the things that in the justice work that I do, particularly, one of the organizations is a Showing Up for Ritual Justice. It's always important for us whenever we start an activity to acknowledge the land, whose land that we actually are on. So I'm happy that we've been able to do that today, that we're recognizing that. We're all in different places right now in terms of people's land, but so.
We're Thank definitely you, on Ohlone land mm-hmm. here out in West Marin, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So this is Lucky. I have something I wanted to say.
Great. Go ahead.
Well, I think it's very important that we're celebrating and acknowledging whose land we're on and who has been here before. The word indigenous, I think, is going through evolution. Ever since the first picture of the Earth from space, I believe it was in the early 70s, there's been an upsurge of awareness that this planet is our home. And that this planet is the place that all of us are from. So there now is a kind of indigenous awareness about being a person of this place, this earth. So all of us are indigenous in certain ways. Martin Parkell has coined the phrase indigenous soul. I think it's true that one of the things that is important about this time is acknowledging not only the first peoples who were of a certain place on the earth, but the fact that we all are now from a certain place on the earth. We all share responsibility for this place. I also think that it's important to acknowledge that evolution, because in a moment we're going to start speaking about creating a culture, new culture for elders. And that new culture is like and unlike every culture that has come before. So even though the traditional people made space for their elders, we certainly want to borrow some of the best practices of those people, but we also need to develop practices and acknowledgments for elders that are based upon what's happening now. So I think it's important to acknowledge indigenous peoples today and remember our own part being indigenous.
You know, Lucky, Tony Gonzalez said exactly that this morning. He said, wherever we're from on this planet, we're all indigenous to Mother Earth. And he spoke exactly your mind. So thank you for bringing that.
Great.
Okay, before we begin our conversation today on the emerging culture of conscious eldering, let's see, I want to talk a little bit about the four-day Conscious Elders Network gathering last month at the Mercy Retreat Center in Burlingame. It was attended by 80 active and vital, inspiring elders from all over the country, meeting in response to our concerns about the planetary crises, the serious social justice and environmental issues we face as a nation, a quest motivated by our deep desire to leave a livable world and future for our grandchildren and all life. We strategized on how to grow this movement and expand and strengthen the scope of our activism in areas of environmental and climate action, social and economic justice, and regenerative living, defining a comprehensive education program and curriculum for shifting our consciousness as individuals and as a collective, and setting the stage for establishing a network of elder circles and climate and social justice action chapters across North America. And we bonded and inspired one another and had a lot of fun together. And Lucky, Kurt, and I met Barry Barkin at Conscious Elders Network gathering last month, where Barry gave a presentation, and we discovered that we are all on the same trajectory of changing the paradigm of aging, of changing the stereotypes of aging, of decline and the marginalization of elders, and growing an elder culture. So let's start the conversation by asking Barry. Hey, Barry, how did you get started with caring for the aged?
Well, first of all, it's not about caring for the aged. That's the wrong paradigm thing. But it's in common parlance, and we need to change common parlance. I got involved because I was told to do so by forces beyond myself. I was sitting under an oak tree in Berkeley. And I wouldn't say quite I was in a vision quest, but there was a vision questing me to devote my life to restoring the role of elders, vital, vibrant, wise, loving, compassionate, empowered elders to the culture. And so I began, this was in the mid-70s, and in 1977, with my friend Bob Burke, we went into an old age home, a benign old age home, but nonetheless an institution.
Did you visit your grandmother before this or after?
This was after I visited my grandmother. That was, I guess that was a defining moment for me when I visited my grandmother in the 1960s in a terrible, terrible nursing home in Long Island, New York, where she said to me, Barry, you couldn't believe how bad it is here, how bad they are to me. And that experience really, really imprinted my life because I was working as a civil rights reporter for an African-American newspaper in the South at the time. And I realized that my grandmother in the nursing home had less civil rights even than people in the penitentiary. And so I began my work in the nursing home with my friend Bob to begin to create a new culture based in what we call the regenerative community that empowers people and helps to restore a sense of meaning and purpose and connection to them.
Well, since 1977, you must have seen a lot of changes in the elder care systems. Can you give us some examples?
Well, you know, in 1997, we started an organization called the Pioneer Network to change the culture of long-term care and ultimately of aging. And this year, for example, there were 1,000 people at our national meeting in New Orleans. And we've had a major impact on creating, you know, I was talking with Lucky the other day and about nursing homes and saying that they're both the worst that we could imagine still, and there are shining lights. And what the Pioneer Network has been about is creating the shining light. At the same time, we've been very much about regulatory enforcement and improving regulatory enforcement. And one of our great victories is that it is no longer commonplace to drug up old people in nursing homes or to tie them down, you know, just on the whim of staff.
So it's a more personal centered approach.
It's a person centered approach that we've been working to build, and not only here, but we've done some work in Canada and in Israel as well to create a person centered communal culture of aging that's empowering to everyone, and that is really a multicultural phenomenon.
And intergenerational, because it's in a whole matrix of people.
Intergenerational, and that's right. Why don't we come back to the matrix later? I don't want to hold the whole conversation here. Why don't we open it up a little bit?
Okay. Lucky, would you like to weigh in?
Well, I think the part of the spectrum I represent today is the internal. Barry is very versed on what kind of changes are happening in the world and what kind of changes need to be happening in the world to empower older people. But I'm really interested in the kinds of changes that need to happen internally so old people can empower themselves. So I represent the side of the discussion today about creating a elder culture from the inside out.
Can you tell us a little bit about, don't you do some work with elders on the phone that are isolated, perhaps, and homebound?
Yes. As a matter of fact, we had our first meeting today. We've been doing this for a couple of years now, but every now and then we take a break. And today we got together again after a significant break and also adopted a new platform which enables us to get together those who have computers to interact online via computer and those who don't to interact with each other via phone. So we held a group meeting. These are by and large people in their 80s and 90s and people who are isolated by being disabled and being sick and being old. And many of them have never had the opportunity throughout most of their lives to have any kind of conversation in depth about anything particularly related to aging. There's so much perspective and sensibility amongst old people that our culture desperately needs. It's so great to bring together these people because through interacting with each other, they gain appreciation for what has happened to them as they've aged and become aware, for many of them the first time, that they hold something of significance to the world they're in. And it's amazing to have an 86-year-old person that's all broken down look at themselves in a mirror and actually recognize that they have value, a very precious value to all of us. That changes their relationship with themselves and changes their relationship with everything else, too.
Thank you, Lucky. In case you've just tuned in, our show today is about the emerging culture of conscious eldering, and our guests are David Lucky Goff in Sebastopol, Kurt A. Kowald in Southern California, and Barry Barkin in Berkeley. Let's bring in Kurt. Do you have any comments?
Well, actually, what I wanted to do was to ask Barry and Lucky to respond to something, and that is, I think the last radio show we had, we became aware of almost like a demographic split in the elder community. That was the people who are coming into their elderhood in their 60s and 70s, and who are still experiencing, in most in many cases, and maybe even a majority of cases, experiencing a lot of physical mobility, or their capacity for mobility was high. Their physical energy was high, and then there was another awareness of folks who were maybe in their 80s and 90s who are starting to experience a restriction in their mobility and their capacity to move around, and that there were some differences that came up in that conversation around that those two groups. And I'm if that is a real way to understand some of what goes on in the aging process, I was hoping that maybe we could get some comments from from Barry and Lucky on that and their thinking about it and their experiences with it.
So, it's a good question, Kurt. I know Dead Space is terrible on the radio. Why don't you start speaking, Lucky, because I need to think.
So I can speak to it. Yes, I'm ready to, actually. Thank you for bringing it up, Kurt, because I think this represents a really significant break point, if you will, in eldering. There is, I believe, a kind of spectrum that exists between what is known as retirement age and what happens when one gets older. And this I would call a spectrum of loss. There is at the beginning not much loss, and most people are pretty culture-bound. And maybe even complaining a little bit about what aging tends to bring, and certainly brings a whole bunch of letting go. But people in the 80s and 90s have experienced a lot of letting go, and are isolated not just physically, but psychologically, psycho-emotionally, because they actually live in a very different world, a world where loss is the norm, a world where dying is the norm, a world where not having everything that you're used to having, not having what is needed to live, is the norm. So from that, they have a very different perspective. And I think it's really important that when we talk about elders, we differentiate those young elders, people that are making the break from the normal way of living that our culture seems to suggest, to those people who have lived a long time in the shadows and have a very different perspective. So I think, you know, if we're going to actually have a very meaningful discussion today, we need not only to talk about the state of elders in the world, but also acknowledge that there are people who are younger elders, and there are people who are older elders, and they live in worlds that are not identical.
Barry, did you have any comment?
Yeah. Yes, and. It's true that there's a difference between people in each decade of life, and when we're talking about creating a new elder culture, you know, in our work, it's with the Elders Guild, in which people meet who are in their 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, and 90s in community, and our work with people in long-term care homes, where it's an older demographic, often disabled, very frail. What we see constantly is the regenerative potential of people. And in what we need to be doing, I believe, is creating a new elder culture with guiding principles, with operational principles that pervade every aspect of aging, from the individual of any age group to who is an elder, to family members, to people who are in denial of aging, to people who are in love with the process of aging, to institutions that serve elders, to government agencies, wherever we look. There needs to be a new culture of aging that recognizes the well-being and the capacity for growing and the potential that each person has that's beyond anything you can imagine. And at the same time, we're meeting the needs of people who are who are in need of support, but at the same time doing that with a recognition of their potential and not putting them in a box of definitions such as patient, and never defining a person by diagnosis or frailty or ability or educational level or age or whatever. You know, this is where the elder culture needs to go in a way that affects everybody. It's about a consciousness. It's about creating a new consciousness that permeates all the places where elders gather and all the places where they gain support and all the places where policy is made and money is spent on the care of elders and the support for elders.
And now back to our conversation on the emerging culture of conscious eldering with our guest, David Lucky Goff, who's written, co-authored a book, The Age of Actualization, A Handbook for Growing an Elder Culture. Kurt A. Kowald, who is a Unitarian Universalist community minister and activist, and Barry Barkin, who has worked with the Live Oak Institute to restore the role of the elder in society since 1977. Maybe now's a good time, Barry, to tell us the definition of an elder. Do you have that in front of you?
No.
I have it. So I think I'll read it because I think it's really a great statement.
Context before you read the thing?
Yeah.
So when we started our work in 77, we realized that elders in our culture were and still are in so many ways, captive to a whole negative stereotype of aging that was debilitating and disempowering to people. And just as in the civil rights movement and in the women's movement, everything had to start with changing the way people perceive themselves. So we went into a long-term care home for the first time. We've been spreading it around everywhere we go, the idea that we must look at elders in a way that's positive and powerful and empowering. And now you can read it, brother. Thanks.
Okay. So here's a definition of an elder. An elder is a person who is still growing, still a learner, still with potential, and whose life continues to have within it promise for and connection to the future. An elder is still in pursuit of happiness, joy, and pleasure, and her or his birthright to these remain intact. Moreover, an elder is a person who deserves respect and honor, and whose work it is to synthesize wisdom from long life experience and formulate this into a legacy for future generations. So that is quite a positive statement from our usual stereotype of aging. Kurt.
I was going to, were you going to call on me?
Yes.
One of the terms that stood out in there actually triggers what one of the things that I wanted to add in after Lucky and Barry both, talked about the difference in the elder elders and the newer elders, and then the whole synthesis, bringing that all together in terms of creating a new culture. That was the term that you just said, synthesizing wisdom. One of the things that has been so important to me as I've entered into this world, this new country of eldering and elderhood, has been the recognition within me that there are developmental stages. There are discrete developmental stages and experiences that seem to me to be psychologically as organic and also as profound as anything that we experience at any other time in our life, from birth to up. So that what I'm experiencing now and the shifts and understandings that are coming to me, coming unbidden, as I have liked to say, those shifts are just as important as the shift in consciousness for a 7-year-old, for instance, who now becomes able to do certain kinds of logical thought that weren't available to a 6, 5, 4-year-old. And one of those that I wanted to add in here is something that we've talked a lot about in our group, and that Lucky was had teased out at one particular point, and that is the whole idea of a paradoxical consciousness. That is, being able to hold within our consciousness the capacity to see a variety of meanings and a variety of possibilities in the situation that seems more, we are more able to do that for two reasons. One, that we have so much more experience, and so we can call on, yes, I've been through that, and I know that those are all possible answers to the situation. That's one thing. The other is that there's actually something going on in our consciousness itself in this evolutionary stage that we're in this aging stage that we're in, that actually allows that kind of, that capacity to pull a paradox of consciousness in our own, in ourselves. So I just want to lift that up as one of the many different things that I see as part of the developmental stages that are going on in these times.
Thank you, Kurt. You know, go ahead.
It's important to realize that everything that each of us is saying is real and true, and that what we're really doing is filling out the mosaic of what it is that makes up the kind of a consciousness, the kind of awareness, the kind of restructuring of the culture of aging that's going on. And so I'm thrilled to hear what Kurt is saying and what Bing is saying. You're very wise, bros.
Yes, and I want to amplify it a little bit, too. I'm aware that in this hour, we couldn't possibly talk about everything that is a little bit too aging. So I've been giving some thought. As you know, being an older guy, so I'm used to these limitations. Been giving some thought to what I want to say in this hour. And I think it's important before we get off the line that somebody say, not only are the changes subtle, and you may be getting an inkling by hearing Kurt talk about paradoxical awareness, or Barry talking about all of this be real. The changes are subtle, and younger people, by and large, don't recognize the changes that are happening later in life. And as a result, are often accused of being ageist. But I think what's going on, in addition to the ageism, there is plenty of fear about, is the just not having the experience, not knowing that there is something that happens to people besides dying when they turn 65 or older. And I think there's a little merit in just having older people have a voice where they can describe for themselves the changes that are occurring to them. Things like Kurt is talking about that come on unbidden. And I also wanted to say that our discussion today about emerging elder culture is important to people that listen to this show on a regular basis, to the post-carbon society. If we want to change the world, it starts with changing the way we see ourselves and each other. And the sensitivities that arise late in life because of what we've lost and because of what we've gained are important to the process of trying to make a better world that is more humane and has a better chance to go on evolving. So evolution is at our backs right now, insisting and maybe even demanding that we grow and change ourselves. And from my perspective, this is most felt inside originally But maybe one various thing, too, is also important in terms of we need to shape a world that is more responsive to what's going on within us. That's all I have to say.
Thank you, Lucky. Now I'd like to, there was a lot of talk about activism in the Conscious Elders Network gathering toward climate action and social justice. And I think we're all thinking about there needs to be a lot of inner activism or inner work done. Can you speak a little bit about that, Lucky?
I could, but I want to make sure there is adequate time for Barry and Kurt to be able to speak to the, because each of them are activists in their own way. And so I'm curious about how they are also blending the awareness of this unbidden sensitivity that's rising in them with their work in the world.
Okay. Kurt or Barry?
Well, I'm willing to speak, but I think I just spoke. Barry, do you have something that you could offer?
This is such an awesome thing that's happening here because it's reflective of the consciousness that's already growing. The elder culture is already alive and happening. And so when I... You know, and I watch the way that Lucky yields and Kurt yields, and even I yield a little bit to one another. This is so beautiful. And you know, my wife Debbie and I, you know, at Live Oak Institute, we've been working for many, many years to create an organization called the Elders Guild. And the Elders Guild we meet in Berkeley at the North Berkeley Senior Center on the third Sunday of every month at 1:45. And we have three foundations in the Elders Guild because they're all related. One is community. The second is wisdom, the cultivation of wisdom. And the third is to be a champion of the future. And this Sunday, we're having a program by a Palestinian-American and a Jewish-American activist who are going to be talking about all of the good that's happening in Israel and Palestine among people on the grassroots putting themselves at risk making peace. And, you know, and this process of being an elder really is a process of shaping ourselves so that we can be effective peacemakers in the world. And I'd like to quickly read something called An Elder Champion's To-Do List. Things to do. Wake up. Grow. Enjoy the process. Bring joy to the darkest places. Contend consistently with anger. Calm the hurt that lies beneath it. Anger impedes effectiveness. Become self-aware. Beware of the boomerang. Be kind. Be kind to everyone. Be kind to ourselves. Be kind even to those we don't like. Our kindness is healing. Be gentle. Open the ears of our hearts. Soften resistance. Bring us closer. Gentleness is our strength. Nurture community. Become a living bridge. Learn, teach, and just be. Support one another. Practice wherever we are. Keep our eyes on our purpose. Play the game accordingly. In the moment, for the future, yes, we shall overcome. And embodied in this, I believe, is a discussion about how we grow in ourselves as activists to really come from our elder place to help to change the world because the world desperately needs elders right now.
Kurt, did you want to join in?
I feel moved to say something.
Okay, Lucky, go ahead.
I just want to make sure that anyone out there who is an old person, who is listening to us, the world is inside you as well as outside you, if you're able. And I'm hoping, despite all those intense problems that come to us as we're aging in this world, there is an opportunity to give voice not only to the lament we feel, but to the inspiration that is coming too. The fact that one can hold the difficulties of the world, the sorrows that we're surrounded by, and the sorrows we're experiencing directly, alongside the miraculousness of having the opportunity to exist at this moment and having the chance to see the sunrise or the day proceed or whatever it is. It's amazing. And somehow, I think it's important that each of us, each person, each of us, we're reaching a stage where the culture is pretty much willing to cast aside. And yet, we hold this amazing, amazing awareness. And I think it's important for any old person listening to know there are other old people around who are also feeling these same changes. And having the opportunity to speak with them and to share what it is that one is experiencing, the hardships and the graces, is amazing. And it changes the whole perspective in life about being aged and having this rare opportunity to make sense of what we're experiencing. So I just wanted to add that little piece because I feel there may be some people out there, some older people who are feeling hopeless and cast off. I want them to know that there is some awareness growing as a result of the life they're living.
Thank you, Lucky. Yeah, it's so important, I think, for elders to come together and, like you say, to feed each other and to nourish each other and give each other mutual support. And I see that's happening in residential care. There's a kind of a social revolution in instead of focusing on entertainment and distractions, that to one that centers on resident contributions and peer support, that they're engaged in choosing the activities they would like to engage in.
May that be so.
Yes. It's happening in pockets. And good. It's more than choosing the opportunities they're engaged in. It's having a voice and a choice in everything that happens within what used to be an institution and what needs to become a home and a community for them.
Mm-hmm. Way to go, Barry.
Yeah, it's interesting. That reminds me of the poem, because what I see in this, one of the things that we're talking about is that allowing, so this is a direct opposite of what has often happened around the creating of elder community, like places like Sun City or wherever, where the entire place is elder folks, with the idea that there's some kind of a leisure that comes with that. And instead, what I see is a possibility arising now of community of elders, not necessarily where we're all living together, but where we're actually in conversation together. And that part of what rises out of that is a new sensibility of being able to track and support the developmental changes that are experiencing. So there's a piece around community that I want to lift up. Lucky actually retranslated a poem by Rumi that is called The Soul of Community. And in that, there is just that real awareness of that we have. Well, one of the lines is, the help that has been longed for is here. Joined with other great souls, gathering together becomes a ceremony approaching mystery. And so there's something very deep about that kind of engagement that I think is especially important, and I wanted to raise that up too.
Thank you, Kurt.
Thank you.
How long is this show? I don't
know. We're going to wrap up in about 5 minutes.
Oh, okay.
And I wanted to ask each of you to say some final words before we have to wrap it up. Would you like to start, Barry?
I don't know what final words I could say, except that we're all connected. We're all connected to one another. We're all connected to the generations. We're all connected to the Great Mother. We're all connected to Creator. And one of the things that I keep witnessing at gatherings of elders on the path of conscious aging is that there's a retribalization going on that includes everybody, that is multi-abled and even multi-species, and unfortunately in the gatherings that I've been to, not sufficiently multicultural. And it's very important that in building this movement that we really become multicultural, multi-ethnic, and also that we remember that love is the most important thing that lives in our heart, and that we need to be on a path of bringing our lives into harmony with our purpose and our meaning for the sake of not just ourselves, but our families and all the people who are going to come after us.
Thank you, Barry Barkin. Lucky, would you like to say a few final words?
Sure, I'll end with what I think of as a good thing. So everything that Barry just said about what we need is so true. And the good news is that life seems to be steering us in that direction anyway.
Yes.
That the evolutionary thrust of the universe, which we feel in the particulars of our lives, moves us inevitably towards the same outcome. We're all going to die. We're all going to pass through. Maybe not all of us, but most of us are going to pass through this same aging process. And happily, the universe is going to get hold of us and reshape our awareness. And through slowly reducing us into what the universe really thinks is essential, what is essential. And happily, that process happens naturally. It's hard to get out of it. And, you know, the multiculturalism ends up in a kind of indigenous well-being that we all can share in as a result of slowly being reduced to a most humanness.
Thank you, David Lucky Goff. Kurt, would you like to?
What an honor to follow those two statements. I think the thing that I would say right now, amongst many things that each of us could have said, I'm just really I just want to say to this audience that's listening that, you know, what an incredible radical revolution this is, the shifting of an understanding of what it means to grow old. And that in that growing old, there is such potential that hasn't really been recognized. Some in the past in indigenous cultures was and is honored, but you know we're mixing those cultures with new emerging cultures and new learnings in all sorts of areas, and so there's a potential here for a new way of living within the culture that I think is extremely important, and that word needs to get out more and more, So I'm very grateful for this radio show, for the opportunity for some of that to happen. So thank you for asking us to participate.
Thank you, Kurt A. Kovold. Thank you, David Lucky Goff. And thank you, Barry Barkin, for joining us on Post-Carbon Radio. And all our programs are archived at WM, for West Marin, WMPostCarbon.com. And now stay tuned for Cruisin' with Jeffrey Wilkinson.
Thank you all.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
I'm trying to spread the word about this immense issue, but I find it absurd why so many people are confused. Some people don't understand the weight of this problem. Act now before it gets out of hand, cause the earth is calling. I was 10 years old, exposed to it. The inconvenient truth really made me concerned how it was going to affect the youth. The temp is still rising from the pollution we produce. We need to start striving for a solution to reduce. When we burn fossil fuels like coal and gasoline, we're using dirty energies when we should be using clean. When we burn, we're adding to the greenhouse effect. CO2, CH4, and N2O collect.